This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 236, and today we are talking about great books to give as gifts for the holidays. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Tears of Price, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. How's it going?
It's going great. How about with you?
Pretty good. I've been super lazy. It's like, not as many things go on in the world of books and publishing at the end of the year, so I've had a little more time to read and watch Elementary, which I talk about all the time, so I won't bore anybody with that, but oh my goodness, it's so good.
So. I've never watched it, but your recommendations are usually solid, so I should give it a shot.
It's, you know, I had a lot of, like, things that I prejudged before I even saw it, you know, so it has not done many of those things, which I really appreciate. Also, it has Risa Fons, who I think is, like, one of the sexiest men on the planet, which is, he's just a weird, pasty, blonde guy, British guy. But for some reason, I don't know, man, he's just, he's awesome. So we are going to talk about great books that you can give as gifts this year. Before we do that, I want to tell you about our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. Let me ask you a question. How well do you think you know people? And how well do you think they know you? Six award-winning, best-selling authors of suspense explore the lingering threat of secrets and the inescapable fear that they can't stay buried forever. So no matter how dark the hiding place, the consequences of revealing the truth can bring out the worst in lovers, friends, family, and strangers. And check this out. You can read and listen to all six short stories in the Never Tell collection free with Prime. You can learn more at amazon.com/nevertell. And these best-selling authors include Liv Constantine, Laurith Ann White, Andrea Bartz, Rachel Housel Hall, Avi Pachoda, and Carolyn Kepnes. Again, you can read and listen to all six short stories free with Prime and also Kindle Unlimited. So make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. HeroQuest is a graphic novel that is the story of a genetically augmented metahuman named Hero who travels into the multiverse 400 years into the future to save Earth from a disaster it cannot avoid. It has everything from mutants to robots to zombies to aliens, witches, and more. It's a quest for 10 rings of tremendous power from 10 different worlds that will be needed to save our world from certain disaster. It's an epic journey that will require the hero named Hero to be cursed to save the lives of billions on Earth. It's a story of heroism, wonder, betrayal, and finally, revelation. This is the hero's journey. This is Hero's quest. So the story was imagined by the mind of Steve Aoki and written by New York Times bestselling author Jim Kruger and Steve Aoki. So make sure to check it out. And this episode comes thanks again to Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour.
Okay, so, like I said, gift guide in the form of talking gift guide, I guess is what this is. I'm going to kick it off with a philosophy cookbook, which sounds strange, but once I tell you what it is, it won't sound that strange. It is Forking Good, an unofficial cookbook for fans of The Good Place by Valia Lupescu and Stephen H. Segal. And if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that we love The Good Place. It's a great TV show. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. One of the main characters, Chidi, is a philosophy professor. And also, they live in this place where they have the most ridiculously hilarious restaurant names. And there's a lot of things about food in the show. And the authors of this cookbook have made recipes that are sort of, they have philosophy puns, like for names, like macaroni and Socrates. And I think, therefore, I clam chowder. And so each thing is like an actual recipe that you can make, but they also explain like the philosopher behind the recipe or the philosophical concept behind the recipe. So you're like almost like learning. It's like getting a cheaty lecture. And so even if you don't watch The Good Place, which again, I highly recommend that you do, it's really fun. So it is called Forking Good, an unofficial cookbook for fans of The Good Place by Valia Lupescu and Stephen H. Segal.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love The Good Place. Did not know that existed.
It's so pretty new.
My first pick is one of my favorite mystery thrillers of this year, and it's American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson. I just love this book so much. I actually read it on audio, and the audio narrator is Bonnie Turpin, and she does an excellent job. So this is kind of a spy story, but it's also a bit of a mystery, and it's about a young Black woman who's working for the FBI in the late 1980s, and she is recruited by the CIA to spy on the president of Burkina Faso while he is in the U.S., and then she eventually goes abroad to kind of try to continue her relationship with him, and along the way, she's having to confront a lot of conflicted feelings and ideas about like what it means to be a good American, what it means to be a good person. And also the really interesting thing about this novel is that it is sort of dual timeline. So she's recounting the story to her two young sons, which is a few years after like the main action of the book. It's just a really great book. If you like historical fiction, if you like thrillers, if you like mysteries, I highly recommend it. And that is American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson.
My next pick is The Beautiful Ones, Prince's memoir that came out this year. Sometimes when celebrities pass away, I don't feel great about when they publish like their diaries or, you know, other things that they have written that they did not intend to see the light of day. However, Prince was actually working on this memoir. It had been announced. He was working on this when he passed away. And they did finish it up. They added a lot of photos. Like, I got this book in the mail from the publisher. It's, like, a little over 200 pages. It weighs more than any other book that I've picked up this year. The paper, all the paper is really beautiful. It's glossy, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. So it weighs a ton. I was like, what is in this package? And then I saw it was the Prince member, and I was so excited because he was so great. And it's, you know, some of his writing that he was doing, but also never seen photos. There's like scrapbook things, lyric sheets, and again, like the stuff that he had started to write before he died. So if you love Prince, or you know someone who loves Prince, or you just want to, you know, check out a piece of musical history, it is The Beautiful Ones by Prince. Now, we have a whole bunch more books to tell you about, but before we do that, I'm going to tell you about our next sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must-read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Taming Seven is an epic and unforgettable love story in the international best-selling and TikTok phenomenon The Boys of Tommen series from Chloe Walsh. So Tommen's cheekiest lad, Jared Gibbsy Gibson, has always been a comedian, but inside he is haunted by events of the past and he uses humor to cope, hiding his true self from the world. Then you have Claire Biggs, who is the epitome of sunshine. She's always loved Gibbsy, her brother's friend and her favorite neighbor. She also has always seen a side to him that no one else seems to notice, and she becomes determined to tame her wild at heart childhood best friend. So the Boys of Tommen series is an internationally best-selling YA romance series that has taken TikTok by storm. It's perfect for readers looking for new adult slash crossover romance, dual point of views, friends to lovers, marathon worthy TikTok books, and angsty tearjerkers. Taming Seven is published today, and it's the fifth book in the series, so make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so Tirza, you're up.
All right, so my next pick is Unmarriageable by Sonia Kamal, and I have been recommending this one all year long. It is a contemporary retelling of Pride and Prejudice, but it's set in Pakistan. And what I love about this book is it's a little bit meta. It's very clever. You know, it's very obviously a retelling of Pride and Prejudice as far as like the characters and the plot. It follows the original text pretty closely. But the characters are also like aware of Pride and Prejudice, and they talk about the original text and they make connections. And so it's very clever and sort of self-aware in that sense, but it's really just a fantastic novel that illuminates culture and traditions that I personally wasn't very familiar with. I don't know a whole lot about Pakistan, but I learned a lot in this book, and it was also just really fun to learn about society and culture through this lens of a classic novel that I happen to love. And it also does a really good job of staying true to the whole you know, Austen's original intent of social satire, but it also has a really good romantic subplot as well. And I think my favorite character in this retelling is the Charlotte Lucas character. I think the author did such a good job with her. So if you like romance, if you like, you know, classic retellings, definitely pick up Unmarriageable by Sonia Kamal.
My next pick is my favorite picture book of the year. It is Cats Are a Liquid by Rebecca Donnelly and Misa Saburi. And it is exactly what it sounds like, because if you have cats or spend any amount of time looking at pictures of cats on the internet, you have definitely seen those photos where cats fit themselves into the most ridiculous spots. My favorites, of course, are the ones that are glass and you can see them, like when they fit themselves into a vase or a mug. Many people have seen the pictures of my cats on the internet. They like to sit in mixing bowls and they like pour themselves right in there. And so this is a funny picture book about how cats do that very thing. But also it is inspired by the Ig Nobel Prize winning investigation of how cats behave like liquids. And it's kind of like in this little rhyming thing, like cats fill, cats spill, cats flow downhill, cats tip, cats drip, cats grip, snip, rip. And if cats are liquid, except when they're not. And they've done this adorable job of these photos where, you know, they're holding cats and, you know, the cat is like, it looks like to be 3 feet long the way they're holding it, or like it's wrapping itself around something. Because my cats do that very thing. My cat Ziva, and I watch him and like, I can't figure out if he's like a slinky or a caterpillar or what, but like I will open a little drawer in a dresser and he will immediately try to shove himself into it and like stretch himself out so far, and then all of a sudden like his back end just goes bloop, like back into it too. It's just like follows behind closely, and he's like a snake or something. I don't know. Cats are weird. They're freaky. If you think about them too much, like sometimes I'll be watching them and I'm like, they have independent thoughts and they are moving about the house of their own volition, and it's kind of strange. And also there was that great science comics book that came out this year about cats, which was basically like, haha, you're so funny if you think that we've actually domesticated cats, and if they were larger, they would eat you. So I love cats, and this is so cute. It is Cats Are Liquid by Rebecca Donnelly and Misa Saburi.
I love your cats on Instagram.
Thank you.
So, yeah, they're so funny. So I'm going to keep on the whole children's young readers train and say my next pick is To Night Owl from Dogfish by Meg Wolitzer and Hillary Goldberg Sloan. This is a fantastic novel for middle grade readers, young readers, like I would say elementary, lower middle school. And so it's about two girls who kind of enter into this like reverse parent trap situation where they realize that their dads are dating and their relationship might be getting kind of serious because they're sending both of their daughters to the same summer camp in Michigan. And they want their daughters to get to know each other because maybe one day they will officially, make their family a little bit more official. And so the girls, of course, are from opposite ends of the country and they're like, no way, no how. And so they start emailing each other kind of as a plan to be like, we don't want our dads to get married and we aren't going to become friends and we'll go to the summer camp, but we won't talk to each other. And so the entire novel is written back and forth in letters and emails. And the girls give each other sort of code names, Night Owl and Dogfish. And it's just so, so funny and so, so charming. And I loved how their relationship played out from like, no, we're not going to be friends to really becoming friends and like sisters and sticking up for each other. And all I will say is that the book does not exactly go where I think a lot of people would expect it to go, but I kind of loved it, that about this novel. So that is To Night Owl from Dogfish by Meg Wolitzer and Hillary Goldberg Sloan.
Okay, I'm going to make a sharp turn into very serious things. If you have someone in your life who likes to read history, or if you want to learn more history about the United States, I highly recommend The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present by David Truer, which, as we are recording this, it is Wednesday the 20th. The National Book Awards are this evening. I was supposed to be there, but I do not feel well. Very sad, but let's not talk about that. And it is a finalist for the 2019 National Book Award for nonfiction. And so by the time you hear this, maybe he will have won the award. It was also longlisted for the 2020 Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence. Basically, David Truer is Ojibwe from the Leech Lake Reservation in northern Minnesota. I would never have read this book if it was not written by a Native person. And he talks about how, basically, after the massacre of Wounded Knee in 1890, history books don't mention what happened to Native people. Like, after that, like, they didn't disappear. They were still there. They are still here. But history has treated them like, oh, well, there was this big massacre, and then that was kind of it. And, you know, they don't exist in history books anymore. So this is an account of what Native peoples have been doing and what Native American history, you know, for the last 120 years. It is fascinating. I think it's very important. Like, some things you don't realize until they're pointed out to you. And it's like, that's correct. All we know about Native history is way, way, way old. So I highly recommend this book. It is The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present by David Truer. Good luck to him tonight.
All right. So my next pick is Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. And I really liked this book because it mashes up two of my favorite genres, which are mysteries and fantasy. And so it's an adult novel, but it's about a school for magic where there has been a mysterious death. A teacher has died and the magical council has ruled that, you know, she must have been practicing with some, you know, complex deep magic that was way above her and she got in over her head and the spell backfired. However, the headmistress of the school doesn't believe that's true, so she hires a private investigator named Ivy Gamble. And Ivy does not possess magic. So in this world, you know, people with magic exist kind of alongside people who don't have magic. They're just a little bit more obscured, sort of like Harry Potter-ish. But Ivy doesn't have magic. However, she knows magic exists because her twin sister, Tabitha has magic and is actually a teacher at the school as well. So Ivy and Tabitha have this really sort of awkward, complicated relationship. Ivy has always resented Tabitha for having magic when she doesn't. And she has a lot of hangups about, you know, her self-worth and the direction her life has gone because of it. But she accepts the job because a murder investigation or a possible murder investigation is a pretty big job. And so once she gets there, she's kind of bluffing her way through and trying to figure out, you know, did she die by some sort of magical misfire or was it murder? And so, of course, she has to confront her sister and her complicated feelings and this mystery of what was actually going on at the school. I am a rather new Sarah Gailey fan, but I have loved every book of theirs that I have read. And so this was no exception. It's one of my favorites of this year. So if you have a fantasy fan on your holiday shopping list, definitely pick up Magic for Liars.
Sarah has three books coming out next year. They are
very nonstop,
very busy, and like different age groups, I believe. I can't remember what the third one is, but there is, oh my goodness, I'm forgetting all the titles. But the one when about we the librarians magic. On horseback is the one that, right, the YA one, When We Were Magic. And then the Upright Women Wanted, I think it's called, about the librarians who ride on horseback. And then there's another one coming out at the end of the year, but I can't remember what that one's called. But I'm excited about all of them.
I love it.
My next pick is another history book, if you like military history, or just great biographies, or just learning. It is All Blood Runs Red, The Legendary Life of Eugene Bullard, Boxer, Pilot, Soldier, Spy, by Phil Keith and Tom Clavin. I got really excited. I don't know why I said Philip. So I love learning things that I don't know, and I did not know anything about Eugene Bullard. He was the son of a former slave and an indigenous Creek woman in Georgia. Not a great time to grow up in Georgia, being African-American. He ran away from home when he was 11. Eventually, his travels landed him in Europe, and he became very famous there for being a boxer. He was a great boxer. And then later, signed up during World War I and became the first African-American fighter pilot in history. Came back from the war. He was a celebrated hero. But he did all kinds of amazing things after that. Just like a really fascinating man. And like I said, I had never heard of Eugene Bullard. And I was really glad that I read this because he was a spy. He worked in, like, he was just amazing. So it is All Blood Runs Red, The Legendary Life of Eugene Bullard, Boxer, Pilot, Soldier, Spy by Phil Keith and Tom Clavin.
Excellent. So my next pick is Pumpkinheads by Rainbow Rowell and Faith Erin Hicks. And this is a graphic novel, and it is a delightful graphic novel. It's very fall-centric, so we're like kind of crossing holidays here because it takes place on Halloween. But it is one of the most charming stories I have read all year long. So if you know somebody who likes YA stories and graphic novels, this is a winner. It is about two best friends named Josiah and Deja, and they work at like the Disneyland of pumpkin patches in their small town. And it's their final night of the season, and it's also their senior year of high school. So it's really the last night that they'll ever be working together at the pumpkin patch. And Deja wants Josiah to go for it and make his move with his longtime crush. And Josiah is a little bit more reserved and nervous, and he just, you know, loves the job so much, and he really wants to focus on having like a good night as an employee. And Deja's like, no, we're going to seize the day. This is our last chance. And so they go on this epic adventure throughout the pumpkin patch over the course of their final shift. And it is full of mishaps and funny encounters and this goat that has gotten loose and is wreaking havoc on the pumpkin patch. And it's just so funny and charming. And it's the type of book that will make you go, ah, at the end, which is just fantastic. So also the art is really, really awesome. So again, that's Pumpkinheads by Rainbow Rowell and Faith Erin Hicks.
Did you see that video that was going around a few weeks ago of the moose eating the pumpkins? just, yes, like, standing there. Like, there was a whole bunch of them by someone's mailbox, and he was just, or she was just having a great time. Just like they looked so small next to the moose, and they were just like crunch, crunch, crunch. It was amazing. We have moose around here, but I never get to see them. Like, I've seen them like one or two times near where I live, and then a few more times farther up Maine. But they're so interesting to look at. And not to be tangled with.
Yes. They're in Michigan, but I live too far south in Michigan to have ever spotted one here in the state. But I spent a month in Alaska earlier this year, and I had two very close encounters with moose, and they were very intimidating, but very majestic.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, they're just so cool. So my next pick is my obsession of 2019. You all know what I'm going to say. It's Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. So if you have somebody in your life who enjoys horror or science fiction or fantasy or those books that are like WTF, this is the novel for them. And also, I keep saying, like, if you have someone in your life to get gifts for, but I just like to buy books for myself. Basically, like, I'm like, all for me. I listen to these things and I'm like, that's what I want, that for me and that for me. So, hey, if you, we're not judging. If you want to get this for yourself, go right ahead. So this is just a banana pants fantasy novel about a necromancer named Harrow and her cavalier, Gideon, the Gideon Nav. And they live at the ninth house. The emperor has put forth a contest where all the heirs to the houses, you know, 2 through 9, go to the first house and try to figure out this sort of mystery of the house. And whoever can unlock it gets immortality and to be by the emperor's side. So things are not going to be as easy as they sound. First of all, Harrow and Gideon do not get along at all. They hate each other. They've grown up where Harrow just torments Gideon constantly. But Gideon wants to leave, and this is her best chance because Harrow has told her that she can leave the planet or leave the house once they win. So she's very excited about this. But, like, there's going to be a million skeletons and lots of blood and goop and all kinds of banana things. It's like a goth haunted version of the Westing game, basically. If, like, really horrible things happen to everybody. But also, it was super, super funny. Gideon is remarkably sarcastic, and it's so great. And for those of you who have read the book, I will tell you that the second book, Harrow the Ninth, which comes out at the beginning of June, is even better. And I know that sounds bananas because I've done nothing but rave about this book all year. And when the editor told me it was better, I was like, blowing smoke. No, it's so hard to explain. It's very different than this first one, but it's so exciting because it's so good. But Gideon the Ninth, so great. It's by Tamsin Muir. Just everyone should read it.
And I totally read it because you were shouting about it so much, and I also loved it. So cosign.
Yeah, it's one of those books that so many people have said to me, I don't read science fiction. I don't read horror. I don't know why I loved this book. And I think that is a testament to her writing.
Totally. Definitely. Yes. So, okay. Excited for that one. My next pick is In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. And this is a memoir. And I think it's just so, so brilliant. I read it in almost one sitting. I had to stop very reluctantly. But then I came back and I stayed up till 1 a.m. to finish. It is the memoir of her time when she was a graduate student. She went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and she became involved with this woman who was abusive, you know, emotionally, verbally, occasionally physically abusive. And it's just this really beautiful memoir told through various literature tropes and literary devices. Like, each chapter kind of focuses on a different trope or device. to tell about this relationship, from how it started to how Carmen eventually got out of it and what she did after. I don't know if anybody, if you've read the first novel or the first book that she put out, which was Her Body and Other Parties. That was a National Book Award finalist a couple of years ago. It was brilliant. So if you kind of, if you like that sort of, how do I want to describe it? It's sort of episodic, but it's also kind of experimental in structure. Like, her memoir is very similar, and it just tells a really fascinating story, but also a really important story about how we don't often talk about domestic abuse between queer couples and sort of the implications of that and why we don't talk about it, how we think about domestic abuse, why it's important to, you know, share these stories and sort of expose the world to them so we can, you know, fight to eliminate domestic abuse of all types. So I just think that if you have somebody who is literary minded, loves memoirs, it's kind of, you know, it's not one of the heaviest memoirs I've ever read, but it is about domestic abuse. So know that going in. But it's also this really gorgeous, brave and fantastic book about a really important subject. And I have been recommending it left and right since I finished. So that's In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado.
Okay, my next pick is The Octopus Museum, Poems by Brenda Shaughnessy. This is a collection that she wrote basically as a mother and the fears that she has for her children, how we've sort of always been worried about things for ourselves and for our children, you know, nuclear war and school shootings and pollution, and how they are now happening all the time and much worse than they used to be. And now as a mother, she's hyper aware of all these things. And so she writes these poems about a future in which cephalopods are now in charge. We've all seen the videos of octopi. You say octopuses, right? I don't know. I feel like somebody told me once you don't say octopi. Anyway, you've seen the video of an octopus that can, like, open a jar, let itself out of its cage, and change color. Like, we know how smart they are. It's kind of creepy and amazing. And so in this future, in her poetry, they're basically like, humans stink. You've done a terrible job. You're not getting any better. We've had it with you. We're in charge now. But, like, in a much more beautiful, poetic way than I just... That was paraphrasing. And so... kind of, she kind of like basically says, you know, we get what we deserve because we've done a terrible job, including like polluting the oceans. And so the octopuses have had enough of us. And if you like poetry or know someone who likes poetry, it's very interesting and beautiful. It is The Octopus Museum, Poems by Brenda Shaughnessy.
All right. My next pick is The Grace Year by Kim Liggett. And this is a very new YA release. And it's been getting a lot of buzz because it has already been optioned for film by Elizabeth Banks. So that's kind of exciting. Although, you know, when it comes to all movie book options, we usually kind of hold our breath until there's casting news. However, this is a really fascinating book. And I could definitely see it making a good movie. It is a sort of dystopian novel that's described as a cross between The Hunger Games and The Handmaid's Tale, which feels like, I don't usually like it when people use big titles to describe a book, but in this case, it really works. So it's about this society called the County, and they are very rigid. Women are very oppressed, and they believe that in a girl's 16th year, she possesses magic that could, like, basically do harm to men and make men do really bad things. And so therefore, all of the girls who turn 16, they are banished from the county for an entire year to go live on this, like, island settlement off in the woods. And they have to basically, like, relinquish their magic. And then at the end of the year, they can come back and they can become, like, docile wives and servants and workers. And so they do. They just go out to this terrible settlement, but there's no, you know, good resources for them. They really have to work hard to survive. And there are also poachers who are like these shrouded men trying to capture them. And if they capture them, they kill the girls and kind of cut them up for parts, which sounds really gruesome because it is. So this is about a protagonist named Tierney who is undergoing her grace year and trying to figure out how to survive. And then she learns a shocking truth about the reason behind the grace year and how it works. So I will have to say this book was sometimes deeply uncomfortable to read, but I could not stop reading it. And why I think it makes a great gift is because it's a really important conversation piece, I think. And it has an ending that makes you kind of go, what the heck just happened? My friend told me to read this book, so I jumped ahead of my TBR list. And when I finished it, I texted her right away and I was like, okay, so this happens at the end. And she wrote back, no, this is what happens at the end. And we had like this huge debate, and then we both had to reread the ending like three times and talk about it. And and it totally just like consumed us for a couple of days. So I highly recommend it. It's technically YA, but I think any adult reader who likes the dystopian feminist type books could really get behind this one. It's called The Grace Year by Kim Liggett.
I've never seen so many people wonder if there's going to be a second book, because usually in cases like this, they are like, oh, well, it's going to be a series or it's going to be whatever. But it's like The Grace Year. It was optioned before it even came out. It's out. And there has been no word as to whether or not there will be a second one. And so I've seen so many people on the internet being like, is there a sequel? Where's the next? When's the next one? You know, and she hasn't said either way. So I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
But she's like busy with the movie, because I do believe, like, a lot of times rights to books sell, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do anything with it. They're just holding on to them. But hers, like, it was pretty much a go from the beginning. So they're really excited to get this out, I think.
Yeah, it's a good book. I don't know if I'd want a sequel, but like that's part of the fun about debating it. So like everybody should read this book, and then we'll see what happens.
So my last pick is funny and kind of dumb, and it fits because it is The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America by Matt Kracht. And it's like a field guide, like you would look up birds. But they're all like these illustrations of regular birds, but they are called by really like immature, funny names. Like, for instance, the Canada goose is called the G-damned Canada goose, and the white-breasted nuthatch is called the white-breasted butt nugget. Like, as I'm saying this out loud, like, this is so immature. And it's just like all these things about, look at this dumb bird. This bird is so ridiculous, and it's quite profane but also incredibly funny. So if you have a birder in your life or you just want a good laugh, I was like, I am not going to laugh at this book. When I read it, I was like, this is going to be immature and it's going to be a bunch of bathroom humor, because I like to prejudge things apparently before I look at them. And actually it's really funny, and it's a good gift for stocking stuffer or whatever. And it is The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America by Matt Kracht.
That's fantastic. All right, my last pick is The Lost Man by Jane Harper. And Jane Harper has quickly become one of my favorite mystery writers. She writes books that are set in Australia. And so this book is set way, way out on a remote cattle station. And it is about three brothers who have all inherited land from their family's cattle station. The oldest brother is the protagonist, and he one day goes to like this very remote spot in between his land and his two younger brothers' land, and they discover the body of his younger brother there. And so clearly he's been left out in the wilderness and abandoned with no supplies, no nothing. And it's so remote and in the desert that if you do that, basically you are condemning somebody to death. So he goes to his family home and he has to, interact with all his family, deal with this tragedy, but also kind of figure out like who would have wanted his brother dead and who would have left him out there and why. And of course, this is all compounded by the fact that there aren't very many people where they are, so there aren't that many suspects. And he has his own sort of humiliating, shameful past that he's also trying to get over and has been avoiding for years, and now he has to confront if he's going to figure out who killed his brother. So I love a good mystery where the setting feels like a really like tangible place from my living room couch, and I have never been to remote cattle station in Australia, but I totally felt like I was there. And I think Jane Harper did such an amazing job with this book. It was a really good mystery. I mean, you might be able to see who the murderer is, but it's one of those books where I did figure out who the murderer was and why and everything about 3/4 of the way through, but I wasn't quite sure how it would all come together at the end. So I kept reading for that, and I was not disappointed. So that is The Lost Man by Jane Harper.
That book, the setting is so ominous, and to think that people actually live like that. Like, when I was little, my mother probably could have gotten me to clean my room by threatening to send me to remote Australia. I mean, it is so frightening. We're basically like, any misstep and you're dead. Whether, you know, it's on purpose or, you know, by mistake. If you forget your water, if you get a flat tire, if you don't have your phone with you and you get stuck somewhere, like, that's it. The sun is going to cook you and you're done. It's so alarming. And I'm like, and people live here. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, it is.
Those are some really great books from, I think they're all from this year. I can't believe The Last Man came out this year. I feel like I read it like years ago now. But what are you going to read next?
So next I am going to read Thunderhead and the Toll by Neil Shusterman, because earlier this year I read Scythe for the first time and I loved it so, so, so much. But I also knew that there were going to be two sequels and the third one was coming out, you know, later this year. It came out earlier this month. So I was kind of holding off and waiting. And then the minute The Toll came out, I was like, okay, it is time. So I just started Thunderhead and I'm really enjoying it. And I can't wait to read The Toll after that. So it's one of the best series I've read in forever. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I have to read The Toll still, but I did read the first two. I love them. I was thinking I might get out of my pajamas and go get The Queen of Nothing by Holly Black, because that is another series that I've been waiting to finish. And we did get the gift of it being moved up from January of next year to this week. But in the meantime, I'm going back to Fire Watching by Russ Thomas. I have not wanted to continue reading a mystery just without stopping in so long. And I started reading this one. It's his first novel. It's about a young police officer who investigates cold cases. He gets called to an old abandoned mansion that has had a fire. They find a body in the basement, and they think it is the owner of the mansion who supposedly fled criminal charges many years before. And when they bring their main suspect in, it turns out to be the man that the investigator had a one-night stand with just the night before. But he can't seem to bring himself to mention it. Every time he thinks that, you know, he's going to be like, I have to take myself off this case because, you know, we had, you know, a fling last night. He can't seem to bring himself to do it. So instead, he just gets dragged further and further along into the case. It reminds me a lot of The Ice House by Minette Walters, which came out many, 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 many years ago. Where they find a body on this property and they don't know whose it is. And the woman's husband had been missing for many years. And I like flew through that book and I cannot wait to get back to this one. It comes out in February of next year. So that is all for today. Teresa, thank you for joining me and doing the holiday guide. And thank you to our sponsors. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. If you would like to tell us something, you can find Tirza on Twitter at Tirza Price. That's TirzaHPrice. You can find me on Instagram at Franzen Comes Alive. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and then we can rant at them about books. And as much as we would love to tell you about books out today, this is the Holiday Guide Show. And also, publishing is slowing down, so the new releases are not as big. Next week, we will have the Best of December roundup. Rebecca and I will be doing that. And then the Best of the Year shows, which is lots of fun. But you can read about the titles that are out now in the show notes of today's show at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And in the meantime, happy reading.